Let's get it going on the Locked On Thunder podcast, a part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your teams every day. I'm your host, Rylan Styles. You can follow me on Twitter at Rylan underscore Styles. That's at R-Y-L-A-N underscore S-T-I-L-E-S. If you don't have Twitter, you can email the show lothunderpod@gmail.com, but this is going to be an exciting show. We're now sitting here on Thursday morning, hours away from the NBA owners voting to allow the NBA season to resume on July 31st. Adrian Wojnarowski gave us the plan in full on Wednesday evening, just as I predicted. I said earlier this week, hey, the vote's not until Thursday afternoon. We're gonna have basically every detail by Wednesday evening, and we do. So we're going to record this show. It's going to be awesome. Basketball is finally back in our lives right now. So last week, we talked all about this Disney World plan. We talked about the speculation aspect and what was confirmed at the time. We even talked to Keith Smith. You can go back and listen to that show, because Keith Smith was the guy who broke the news about the Disney World plan. This week, we've gotten even more news, and now we can finally talk about concrete, factual things that are going to happen in the NBA. It's good to have basketball back. So let's start with just the plan. The overall plan, it'll be the 16 playoff teams: New Orleans, Portland, Sacramento, San Antonio, Phoenix, and Washington. Those are who's coming to Disney World. And then from there, once everyone's down there, they're going to play 8 regular season games. After that, they'll do a play-in tournament if the 9 seed in each conference is within 4 games of the 8 seed. So it sounds by that logic that we will have an Eastern and Western Conference playoffs. It wouldn't make a lot of sense for Portland to play Memphis if by the 8-game mark, Memphis is 2 games up on Brooklyn. I mean, it wouldn't make a lot of sense if they're 5 games up on Orlando. I mean, why wouldn't Portland at that point play Brooklyn or Orlando? So the fact that the 9th seed has to be 4 games from the 8th seed confirms to me that we will see 2 separate playoffs, the Eastern and the Western playoffs. Because if you remember, there was talk of just doing 1 through 16. I think given the wording of this play-in tournament, I think given that, it sounds like that's off the table. We're going to go 1 through 8 each side. So that's what we know so far. The NBA is also looking at a way to reward higher-seeded teams. So you're 1 through 4 in the first round. You're looking to reward those teams that would have had home court advantage that now, of course, get to play in Disney World in front of no fans. And we'll talk all about the different ways they can do that later on in the program. The NBA is also still up in the air on roster spots, how many roster spots will go to each team, and what are they going to do at two-way deals. Again, it's a huge deal for Oklahoma City, so we're going to continue to talk about that at the end of the program. They've set the dates, if you didn't hear. July 31st, we'll start this thing. October 12th is the drop-dead date. October 12th is the last day to have Game 7 of the NBA Finals. And so the NBA Finals Game 7 will be on October 12th, and the draft, you can expect that as normal, I'd say 5 days after October 12th. They might move it up a little bit, but you can really be comfortable saying it'll be 5 days after October 12th. The vote is expected to pass today at 11:30 a.m. Central Time. And again, we'll detail this entire plan because we're going to get the answers to these questions I have coming up. We're going to get those answers today, I bet, or throughout the weekend. We're going to dive back into this plan on Monday because tomorrow, our conversation, part 2, with John Hamm comes out. And he was great. He finishes the part 2 of the golden era of the Book of Thunder basketball right here. Also, you can go back and listen to part 1. You can also listen to Andrew Schleck describe Thunder U. So that's what the plan is right now for this show and the NBA. But basketball's back. It's coming back. And let's dive into what it's going to look like whenever it does return. So the biggest question being thrown out there regarding the return to the NBA is the schedule. How are we going to fit 8 regular season games and the postseason within that July 31st to October 12th window? And that's been something that we've speculated on this podcast for a long time, is the strength of schedule. Because when you eliminate those bottom half of the league, when you eliminate those bottom feeder teams, your strength of schedule by nature is going to go up. The question is, how hard is that schedule going to be? Obviously, someone's going to have a hard schedule, and someone's going to have a schedule that you look at and say it's a lot easier than another team. But how are they going to try their best to balance this if you're the NBA? So sources are telling Yahoo's Vincent Goodwill that the league will just pick up the schedule where it left off. So for example, the Oklahoma City would just pick up with Utah. And if you are playing a team on the schedule that's not in Disney World, you just skip that game and move on to a team that is in Disney World. So you go on down the list until you get to your eight games. In this case, if this actually happens, Oklahoma City plays Utah, Washington, Memphis, Denver, Miami, Denver, Phoenix, Los Angeles Clippers. That would be your eight games. Mathematically, does that work for every single team where you're all going to fit into each other's eight-game window? I don't think so. So I'm not sure how this is actually going to be the plan, but that's what the sources are telling Yahoo right now, as of this morning. Again, the vote will come down at 11:30 a.m., and we should have more information on this by then. If not by Monday, you know, after the news slowly comes out throughout the weekend. Mathematically, it does not seem to be working to do it this way. But that's a possibility. It is going to be that Oklahoma City plays Utah, Washington, Memphis, the Nuggets, the Heat, the Nuggets, the Suns, and the Clippers. So you get two matchups against the Nuggets, a tough matchup against the Clippers, but the rest of them, you can feel pretty confident about. I mean, Miami's a good team, but I think that Utah is going to be terrible once we return to play, losing Boyan and all that's happened with their team this year. Conley not really fitting in there. I think that they're not going to be a good team whenever we return. Washington, they're not a good team. Memphis is a fun team, and they could beat the Thunder, of course, but that game will be interesting because Memphis is really going to fight hard once we return, trying to get out of that 8 seed if they can. But, you know, this isn't the worst schedule. This isn't the worst schedule to have if you're Oklahoma City. I don't know how many games they win or lose. I'm not really going to do win-loss radio in general because I think that doesn't make for good radio. But once we get a concrete schedule, I probably will do it because it's only 8 games. But I'm not going to do it right now with a plan that I don't believe will actually happen. I don't think that the Thunder will have to play Utah, Washington, Memphis, Denver, the Miami Heat, Denver, Phoenix, and the Clippers. I don't think that mathematically that works. I think that by the time you get to your eighth game, the Clippers will have already played 8 games. So what I think is going to happen, here's my prediction. Again, this is just a prediction, is that the NBA will just create an entirely new schedule for everybody. And to make it fair, they might try to tier teams off. So for example, the Clippers, Lakers, Bucks, Raptors are all in a tier. That's tier one. And each team has to play X amount of games from each tier. So you're going to get a couple tier one games, a couple tier two games, and so on and so forth. That's my prediction. However, Brian Windhorst of ESPN says that he's heard from within the NBA to expect a new schedule and to expect the NBA to create, quote, made-for-TV matchups. Made-for-TV matchups is interesting to me. Now, we all love the Thunder. We're going to watch every single Thunder game. But how many made-for-TV matchups can you create for the Thunder with these 22 teams here? Russ would be one. That'd be a made-for-TV matchup. Does it still hold its luster, though, when you consider you'll be watching it in an empty gym in Disney World for the national audience? Again, if we're making TV matchups, we're making it for the national audience. Zion and LeBron, that captures somebody no matter where it's played or when it's played or who's there and who's not there. Ja versus Zion, that captures somebody. Again, no matter who's there, where it's at, and all the other factors. What I'm getting at here is you could see the Thunder, if we're just, you know, going left and right for TV matchups, you could see the Thunder walk away with an easy schedule. You could also see them playing Denver twice, like the eight games suggest. You could see them playing some of these good teams that, again, aren't as appealing to the TV ratings. So it'll be interesting to see how this all unfolds. Strength of schedule has been something that I've talked about on this show for a month, it seems like. But it will be interesting. Again, my idea is that the NBA just creates an entirely new schedule, and then they try to balance it the best they can with maybe marking off teams into tier lists. The bottom line is, it might not be the Thunder, but someone is going to have a hard schedule. Someone is going to feel like they've been robbed. Someone is going to get their schedule tomorrow or today or whatever day that the schedule is released, someone's going to pick their schedule up, compare it to what they had left if they had like 5 or 6 games against bottom teams in the NBA, and they're going to feel outraged. They're going to feel like the NBA just messed them over so bad, and especially if the Lakers get a good schedule. If the Lakers are playing bad bubble teams, then NBA Twitter is going to be set on fire. Because they're going to say the NBA's rigged, they're doing everything for LeBron, and the Raptors got all these just hard opponents. Can you believe this? The Thunder have to play, you know, the Milwaukee twice, and the Lakers are having to play Portland three times. I mean, it's just going to happen if the Lakers get an easy draw. But the bottom line is, someone or multiple teams will have a hard schedule, and it will look incredibly hard compared to what they could have been playing. But the bottom line is, like I said, when you're only taking the top 22 teams, yeah, you can play Sacramento, you can play San Antonio, who are terrible, you can play Washington, who's not very good, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to play Philadelphia, you're going to have to play Boston, you're going to have to play Toronto, you're going to have to play Denver, you're going to have to play LA, Milwaukee. You're going to have to play these teams. That's all that's there. So someone's going to have a very, very tough schedule. After the break, we'll talk more about the schedule and also how the NBA plans to reward high seeds. So the NBA, again, is planning to have this happen on July 31st through October 12th, and I feel very confident that this is going to happen. I know that there was reports today, or Wednesday, I should say, that COVID saw a huge spike in Florida. And a lot of people are wondering, hey, does this impact the NBA at all? Does this impact the plan at all? Florida is huge. It's a huge place. And from what I'm hearing, I know that Nick Engston, who hosts Locked On Mavericks and he lives there, tweeted out today that, yeah, you know, that this is bad for Florida, but that the area that's seeing the spikes is in a different part, an entirely different part of the state than Orlando, than Disney World is. So he's saying that, you know, hey, this is bad for the state, but for the NBA, you can still go to Disney World, you can still be controlled, and even though Disney World is planning to reopen some of the park, the park and the atmosphere there is so big that you'll still isolate players within the portion that has the sports complex. So I wouldn't be too deterred by the fact that there are reports that COVID-19 is spiking in Florida. If it continues to trend and continues to follow down the pathway to Disney World, then we can start having a more legitimate conversation that, hey, this could be bad for the NBA, and there's still a lot of time left. While I am very optimistic and I'm very positive and I'm almost affirmative that we're going to get basketball, there's still a lot of time. 2 months is a long time, especially with how we have seen this virus be unpredictable. But I still feel confident right now that we will see basketball. But the interesting part about the July to October 12th time period here is what we talked a little bit about earlier this week, and that is going up against the NFL. So I mentioned that the NFL starts in September, coming right out the gate with some huge primetime games. You've got Mahomes and Watson playing on September 10th, which should be given by this map here of October 12th being Game 7. It should be in the conference finals. 2 weeks after that, you've got Mahomes taking on Lamar Jackson on Monday Night Football, which, again, is a date that the NBA likes to play on typically, is Monday night in the postseason. October 12th is a Monday night, so Game 7 would be on a Monday night going up against Monday Night Football, and that game is going to be between the Saints and the Chargers. So you could have a doubleheader of Game 7 of the NBA Finals in Disney World and Saints-Chargers. Do I expect Game 7 to still win out in the ratings battle of Saints-Chargers? Yes. Would I still be that optimistic if it was Chiefs-Ravens? No. And so I think it's interesting that the NBA is taking this route and taking this angle to take on the NFL. Especially, again, having Game 7 on a Monday night where the NFL owns Monday nights, they own Thursday nights, they own Sunday nights. They own the entire day Sunday. But they own Monday nights and Thursday nights. I thought maybe you could see the NBA strategically and purposely avoid the NFL. Taking it on head-on is very interesting to me. It really is. So you look at this plan, and I don't think that in August, there were some, you know, football media members and just football fans saying, oh, it's going to be hilarious whenever a preseason game outdoes the NBA. That's not happening. Even your most diehard football fans don't watch preseason. Give me a break. You're going to watch the NBA playoffs. But when we get into October, and that September 10th start date, then you start questioning what's going to happen. Then it becomes a legitimate question. Will a second round or first round playoff game, playoff matchup, will that dethrone Mahomes and Watson? Will that dethrone Mahomes and Jackson? Two of the biggest games that will happen in the NFL season. I think that that's a legitimate talking point here. And it shows that the NBA is willing to take on the NFL. Again, putting their Game 7 of the NBA Finals on the same night as Monday Night Football. It's going to be interesting to follow the ratings battle. And again, I talked about this yesterday. I'm a huge fan of the media itself and how the media works and ratings and you know, pundits and things like that and how media handle situations and how sport leagues handle the media. This is going to be interesting to watch the ratings. And maybe I'm the only one on earth that finds this interesting, but I do want to know how that's going to break out between the NBA and the NFL. One other thing is about the eight game aspect. I don't think anyone speculated 8 games. I know that I always talked about 5 to 6, and that's pretty much the only number I've seen anyone talk about is 5 to 6. 8 games does make a difference. It gives you just a little bit more time to move up or down. And sometimes a little bit more time is all you need. The Thunder are not out of it in terms of the 3 seed. They're not out of catching Denver by any means, especially if you get 2 head-to-head games against Denver. Go beat them, and you're there. But they're also not out of sliding down to, like, 6th. Which would mean that they not only slide down and have a different matchup, but they retain their pick. So like everything else this season, I see these final 8 games as house money for the Thunder. Would you want to move up to 3? Sure, that'd be awesome to say the Thunder finished 3rd. Would you want to slide down and keep your pick? That'd be pretty cool too. Again, people are down on this draft class because it doesn't have the highlight names outside of LaMelo Ball. But there's still a ton, and I mean a ton, of quality NBA players in this draft. You can check out Chad Ford's Big Board on the Lockdown Podcast Network for more information about the draft. He had a great episode with Ryan Russillo earlier this week, mock drafting, I believe, the lottery. He did the entire lottery mock draft with Ryan Russillo of this year. So you need to go listen to that because this draft, I think it's better than people expect. So having 2 first-round picks is always better than 1. You get 2 chances to either hit on both, hopefully hit on at least one of them, or if it's the Josh Huestis draft, miss on both first-round picks, Huestis and McGarry. So you never know. But you always like to have a better chance. So that's all about the schedule. That's all we know right now. And again, we'll know more by the time that you finish this podcast because they're going to vote at 11:30 a.m., Woj is probably going to give us the entire schedule, the entire thing by noon. I know he's going to hop on the jump at 2 if you want to watch that. But on Monday, we're going to break all of this down. But after the break, we're going to talk about some of the questions that remain and how the NBA could still reward higher seeds. So how could the NBA reward higher seeds? You work all year long. You work all season long. You're the top 4 seed. You should get home court. And now we're all playing at Disney World. It's a question that's been thrown out there since this season was suspended and since we had news that maybe it could come back. And it still is relevant to the Thunder. If they got to play that game, such as the Mavericks and Denver got to square off that night that the season was suspended, if they got to play that game between Utah, then we could be sitting right now with Oklahoma City in the 4 seed, and I think we would have been sitting here right now with Oklahoma City as the 4 seed. So for at least a round, these rules could apply to Oklahoma City. Depending on how these 8 games shake out, these rules could apply to Oklahoma City. And nothing's official yet, but these are just things that have been thrown out there within the NBA to possibly figure out a way to reward those high seeds. Let's start with 1. You could see the NBA award players of the higher seed 7 fouls. Now, that player should be designated for the 7 fouls. You can only do it 1 time. So you could say to a great defender like Kawhi, hey, you've got 7 fouls to play with this game. Just go out there, do whatever you have to do, be as physical as you can be, because you've got 7 fouls instead of 6. That's a huge deal. Again, especially for these defensive monsters like a Kawhi, like a Rudy Gobert, like a Paul George. Even Anthony Davis down low. Giannis, these players who will be defending, especially at the basket, especially on contact, that's huge. Patrick Beverley, are you telling me that you'd willing to give Patrick Beverley 7 fouls? He's already annoying with 6 of them. He's going to be pulling off so many antics with 7 fouls, it's going to be unbelievable if the NBA goes this route. You can also see the NBA award the team's automatic possession for the second, third, and fourth quarter. To start those quarters, the higher seed gets the ball. So if they win the tip-off, they get to start every single quarter with the basketball. I don't really like that one a lot. I don't like that one at all. You could see them ship the hardwoods to Disney World. So ship the floor from Oklahoma City to Orlando, put it in, and play on it. That does not seem safe to me to keep shuffling out. Now, I know nothing about changing out basketball floors, but that doesn't seem safe to me to keep changing the playing surface left and right. It also seems like a ton of time to keep doing that. I think you've got two arenas that you're going to hold games in. It seems like a ton of time to keep switching them out every single game. I know that they do it sometimes for hockey, but like, don't they have an 18-hour window to do that, or like a 10-hour window to do that? Or I guess I've seen some videos where it's like the Celtics play and then the Bruins play in like 5 hours after the game. But nonetheless, that seems like a ton of time that it would take to do this, to switch out the hardwoods. So I think that this option's out. And then you've got to include more people to come in. You've got to include people to come in and be in this environment to switch out the floors. Because LeBron James can't switch out a floor. I can't switch out a floor. Billy Donovan can't switch out a floor. You're going to need professionals to do that, especially to make it safe. So I think that this one is just silly and it's out of there. The most hilarious one is that teams get to pick the hotels. You go 1 through 16 and these teams pick their hotels. Number one, if we want to take this legitimately, if we want to take this option and be serious about it, you can't do this. Because you don't know who 1 through 16 will be. Because I would assume you would not want to shuffle hotel rooms once you get to the complex. That's kind of the whole point of the bubble. You're going to want to stay in your environment. So you're not going to want to keep switching hotels. And number two, the fact that this is a big deal in NBA circles of like, well, what hotel are we going to get? It's Disney World. And they've already said that they're going to improve the hotels at Disney World for you. I don't think hotels should be the difference in a team winning or losing basketball games. And I get it. They're going to be there from July 31st to October 12th if you go to the finals and you go to Game 7. But it's Disney World. I think that you're going to be okay. The last one and the most realistic one to me is the higher seed earning a second coaching challenge. I don't like the 7 fouls. That's really gimmicky. That's not really basketball. I don't like the automatic possessions. While it would probably be the least noticeable, because I'm sure most of you out there don't even know how the possessions work quarter to quarter, I still don't like that just as a basketball purist. The hardwood, again, that's impossible. I really think that that's impossible. And then the hotel, I'm just not even going to acknowledge that one. I don't think that that's a big deal either. Getting that second coach's challenge is awesome. And that would be a true advantage. That would be something you can do that also keeps integrity to the game. That would be, I think, the best plan. Does it suck that you lose out a bigger home court advantage than just that? Obviously. But we're going to have to make sacrifices here. The second coaching challenge would be awesome. I think that it would allow you to challenge a huge moment in the first quarter or second quarter, and of course, again, at the end of the game. Because how many times during a game do you see, wow, they clearly got that call wrong, but it's the second quarter, you've got to hold on to your challenge in case this happens at like the 5-minute mark in the fourth. You see that pretty often this year. So if Adam Silver is listening, which I'm sure that he is, shout out Adam Silver, just implement the second coach's challenge for the higher seeded team. I think that that's the best way you can give them an advantage and still not mess with the game as much. Again, 7 fouls would be crazy. Just give one of those Clippers, Beverly, Kawhi, George, give one of them 7 fouls. Are you kidding me? Give Russell Westbrook 7 fouls to get in your face and, try to jump the passing lane and to reach every time. Heck, give Steven Adams 7 fouls whenever people keep driving in on him, bumping bodies with him. I mean, that would be a huge deal. I don't like the 7 fouls. Again, I think that it changes too much about the game. And so another question that's being thrown out there is about the rosters. And we can start with the injured players, most notably for Oklahoma City, Andre Roberson. Can he rejoin the Thunder? Sure, he could play. He did say you know, on March like 15th, really early on in all of this. I'm not sure the exact date. On the Colorado men's basketball page, some podcast that they do in Colorado for the men's basketball team, he did say that he was 100%, he was ready to go, he was about to play G League games before the year was suspended, but he said all that before. He said that at media days that he was a full go. 2 days later, he wasn't a full go. Now, 8 games is a lot more time to get ready than I thought that he would have, plus the training camp period. But I've talked about this before with Andre. Number one, I don't see him returning to that elite form. That's going to be very hard to match. And if he's not elite defensively, you can't play him. Number two, we've seen this song and dance with Andre since the injury. There's going to be some setback. Something's going to go wrong. And why, if you're Andre, why would you even rush back for this? For 8 games in a playoff series. You're going to have to take the minimum next year. You're going to have to prove yourself through the course of the season. So why rush back and risk a setback whenever you've experienced so many already? I just don't think that this would be smart to have him come back. I don't think he'd make a huge difference. I don't think that he'll be elite defensively. I could be wrong. I know a lot of people are excited about the possibility. But I don't see how you cannot play since 2018 and come back and be an elite defender. And again, with Andre, you're not providing anything offensively. If you are not elite, then you can't play. Now, could his free throws improve in an empty gym with no pressure? Maybe. But again, I just don't see it happening. I don't see him coming back. And if he did come back, I wouldn't change my opinion of the Thunder. That wouldn't make or break a series for me, as if Andre's in the lineup or not. Another injury is this John Wall rejoining the Wizards. Again, I don't see this happening. John Wall says he's 110%. Ian Bagley says that the Wizards are not going to play him. But he also says that Eastern Conference teams are preparing as if they will play the Wizards with John Wall. Eastern Conference teams are not counting and trusting the Wizards whenever they say he's not going to play. And Wall hasn't played since December of 2018. I would love to watch John Wall play to see what he has left, but he's coming back from one of the most devastating injuries that any NBA player can have. So if you're John Wall, why would you rush back and risk a setback? Same with Kevin Durant and the Nets. I know that it's like a doomsday scenario for a lot of Eastern Conference teams, and it's been talked about on NBA Twitter. Well, what if KD comes back and him and Kyrie just steal the show in the postseason? Again, these injuries, I don't see these guys rushing back. The biggest roster question for me is not if injured players can return. It's, will they expand the rosters? Will they allow two-way guys to be playoff eligible? And will they allow teams to sign players? And I don't mean go sign strangers or go sign free agents, I should say. I mean sign from within, like the Thunder and Lou Dort. The Thunder tried to manipulate the system. They knew this entire season that they were going to sign Lou Dort to that free roster spot. They knew it. And they tried to manipulate the system with a two-way deal. And it backfired. Now, could you predict it backfiring? No, you couldn't. So this is not a misstep by the organization, but it is something that you have to worry about here. Do I expect the NBA to allow the Thunder to sign Lou Dort? Yes. But, you know, I hope that they do, and I expect them to do that. But the question for the two-way deals is, right now, for those of you that don't know, if you're on a two-way deal like Lou Dort is, you are not eligible to compete in the postseason. You need to be converted to a full contract, which the Thunder will have no problem doing with Lou Dort, and I wish that they could have done it by now. But for other teams, will they allow their two-way guys to be eligible? That's a question being tossed out there right now. I expect that once this vote passes, and once we return to training camp, and once we get started with basketball again, shortly thereafter, the Thunder will send a press release out, and it'll say that the Thunder have signed Lou Dort. That's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting to get a press release that says Lou Dort has signed a full contract, and this will all be over. Lou Dort will play in the postseason. He'll play in these 8 games. I don't know why he's not signed yet, because to my knowledge, the NBA has not frozen transactions the same way that the MLB has. But I don't know why he wasn't signed before this. Again, just trying to manipulate that 35-day system that the NBA put in place. So I wouldn't worry about this too much. The bigger question is, will the NBA just straight up allow all two-way players of every team to play in the postseason even without being converted to a long-term deal? So we should find all these questions out and know everything by Monday. So I cannot wait to hop back on this podcast on Monday and break it all down again. But it's good to have basketball back. The support for this show has been great for these last 2-3 weeks, even without basketball. So I cannot wait to see what happens when basketball returns. It's going to be fun to watch this Thunder team. I mean, people forget how good they were. People forget that they have that ability to test even the highest, you know, ranked teams in the NBA. Even the best teams in the NBA, the Thunder can go toe-to-toe with. I wouldn't predict them to win a series, but they can go toe-to-toe with them, the Lakers and the Clippers and teams like that. So this is going to be a fun 8-game stretch, and the postseason is going to be extremely fun. Can they get out of the first round for the first time since Kevin Durant left? That'll be a big storyline to follow in all of this. But this has been awesome. Follow me on Twitter if you want to get my first reaction to this morning's vote. You can follow me at Ryland_Styles. It's at RYLAN_STILES. Also in the description, leave a review wherever you get this podcast. Subscribe wherever you get this podcast. If you don't have Twitter, you can email me your thoughts, lothunderpod@gmail.com. Again, Monday we'll break all this down. The entire vote from today, we'll break it all down Monday. Tomorrow on Friday, you're going to get part two of my conversation with John Hamm. It comes out tomorrow. We finish talking about the golden era of Thunder basketball, talking about Billy Donovan, what the Thunder did for Oklahoma City, if this was the peak of the Thunder, if Kevin Durant's, you know, what happened with Kevin Durant, and if the Thunder could knock off the Cavs back then. So there's a lot to dive into on Friday's pod with John Hamm, and that one was really fun to record, and I hope that you guys enjoy it as well. Be good and be good to one another. We'll see you next time on Locked On Thunder.